After President Trump announced the U.S. would leave the Paris climate deal, dozens of cities vowed to go it alone. But reducing total greenhouse gas emissions is hard.
A city will set very aggressive goals. It won't meet them. And then a few or 5 years later, they just set new goals that are even more ambitious.
I'm Ari Shapiro. Why some cities are falling short on the next All Things Considered from NPR News.
Listen every afternoon on KTOO Juno.
Tonight on 360 North at 8, a Colombian teen fleeing guerrillas and gangs finds joy and comfort in creativity in films by kids displaced but not defeated. Native Report is next at 8:30. At 9, the Sea Alaska Heritage Institute lecture examines appropriation and repatriation of Native cultural treasures through the lives of a Kwakwaka'wakw headdress. Gavel Alaska returns at 10, tonight on 360 North and 360north.org.
Good afternoon, you are tuned to a Juno afternoon here for Tuesday, the 6th of February of the year 2018. Jeff Brown with you here today. Today we'll be talking with Beth Weigel about library activities. Sarah Radke Brown will be here to talk about the Juno Lyric Opera. Jack Hodges will be here to highlight his new bio book, Above and Beyond. We'll get a preview of Floyd Dryden's production of Mulan Jr. And we'll talk to Karen Smolin, Career Technical Education Coordinator for the School District. That writer's almanac, Burnout, much more here on a Juno afternoon. Well, the forecast for this afternoon is snow, high temperatures near 34 degrees. Forecast for tonight, more snow, mainly before 1 a.m.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. South Dakota lawmakers are rejecting a proposal to place a memorandum on new crude oil pipeline construction. Democratic State Representative Sean Bordeaux represents portions of the Rosebud Reservation. He says the bill comes in the wake of looming Keystone XL pipeline construction.
And we have people who, you know, for countless eons have been in these lands here, and to just dig up pipeline and expect that, you know, it's good for commerce and that's the end of the story. We really have to have a discussion about the land and the health of the land.
Supporters of the bill say the state needs a plan in place when a pipeline spill occurs and impacts drinking water sources. Last year, the Keystone Pipeline spilled more than 200,000 gallons of crude oil in northeastern South Dakota. Bordeaux says he and other representatives will continue to bring similar legislation. He's also sponsoring a bill which requires tribal approval before any extraction of minerals or resources in the Black Hills. Members of the 1890 Wounded Knee Massacre Descendant Society appeared before Oglala Lakota County Commissioners, calling for protection of the site where Lakota men, women, and children were killed by U.S. soldiers. As Jim Kent reports, the county is entirely within the Pine Ridge Reservation in South Dakota, where the Wounded Knee Massacre took place.
Descendants of the Wounded Knee Massacre victims and survivors say they turned to their local county commissioners after failing to receive assistance from the Oglala Sioux Tribe to protect the area from proposed development. An Oglala Lakota man has proposed to develop the area as a tourist site. L'Oreal Blackshaw is president of the 1890 Wounded Knee Massacre Descendants Society.
We believe the land should be left as is, and there should be no development, commercial, structural, of it at all.
Noting that the National Park Service designated 870 acres around the massacre site as a National Historic Landmark in 1965, Blackshaw asked the commissioners to acknowledge the area's historic significance and protect it from development. Lila Hutchison is an Oglala Lakota County Commissioner. She says no one has approached the commission in the past as the Descendants Society did.
And I think we're all real grateful for that, because it has been a worry for a long time that some outside developer would come in and do whatever there. I am in favor of what they're proposing.
The 1890 Wounded Knee Massacre Descendants Society is proposing that the county appoint a planning and zoning board to create regulations that would protect the entire area from development. The county will also create a historic preservation commission to protect the historically significant massacre site. Both proposals will be enacted at the next meeting of the Oglala Lakota County Commissioners. For National Native News, I'm Jim Kent.
Representatives of the United South and Eastern Tribes and the University of North Carolina at Asheville signed an agreement Monday. Under the agreement, the Native organization and university will jointly develop programming and research projects in areas such as economic development, environmental sustainability, health and wellness, and language revitalization. The agreement is for 3 years and seeks for the university to expand its existing Indigenous Studies minor to include specifics from South and Eastern Tribes. The signing ceremony took place in the Washington, D.C. area, where leaders from 27 tribes are gathered this week to discuss Indian Country issues and legislative priorities. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios by Kwanic Broadcast Corporation. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting with support from the Public Radio Satellite Service.
Support from AmeriCorps Vista, whose members fight against poverty while earning money for college and gaining skills, with rewarding service opportunities around the country and info at AmeriCorps.gov/Vista. Support for law and justice-related programming provided by Hobbs, Strauss, Dean & Walker, LLP, a national law firm dedicated to promoting and defending tribal rights for more than 30 years. More information available at HobbsStrauss.com.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio
Network. And you're listening.
And you are tuned to Juno Afternoon here. For our first guest is Beth Weigel, and I've enlisted Beth to read a special announcement about the road conditions.
All right. I did just drive in from the valley, so this is important information. The Alaska Department of Transportation and Public Facilities wants to alert drivers of slick road conditions. As of February 2nd, 2018, at 2:45 p.m., rain is falling on the cold ground in some part of Juno, causing very slippery road services on Egan Drive and other state highways. DOT and PF crews have pre-treated Egan, Loop Road, and other state highways to reduce ice buildup. However, drivers should be alert for slick road conditions throughout this weather event and drive with a high level of caution by leaving plenty of room between cars and increasing stopping distances at intersections. Please drive safely out there, folks.
That's right. We need to... Anything bad to happen to anybody? They're not bad if they go to the library.
That's right. We're having all kinds of good things at the library.
What's going on?
Well, we're deep into our Discover Tech Engineers Make a World of Difference exhibit out at the Mendenhall Valley Library. We've been hosting class visits from the school district elementary schools for the past few weeks and doing an experiment with them where we teach them how to build a very basic water filter out of everyday materials, and then we try to clean up some dirty water that we've created for them. And they're having really fun with the results of that experiment. And then they also get to tour around the library to the various stations for the Discover Tech exhibit. And of course, this is brought to us by StarNet, which is a science, technology, and resources for libraries, along with a variety of other organizations that help bring it to us, like the American Library Association, the Space Science Center, the Juno Community Foundation has helped provide funding, along with the Friends of the Juno Public Libraries, to bring all these kids into the library. So we'll have this exhibit up through the first week of April, and the kids are just having a great time with it. And so if you have a really enthusiastic elementary school kid come home and say, "We had the best time at the library today," it's no lie. So bring them on back and come and check out all the different interactive stations at the library.
Have you any idea how many kids you could stuff in the library in one time?
Well, our class visits have entailed bringing two classes at one time. And usually there's about, you know, anywhere from 23 to 25 to 29 kids in each class. So we're having about, you know, anywhere from 40 to 60 kids come at once, and that's plenty.
And so you use your wrangling skills.
Yeah, and we have them. We split them up, and one group goes into the meeting room, and the other group goes into the library, and then we switch them out so they all get to do everything while they're there.
And what's coming up in the future?
Pardon?
What's coming up in the future?
Well, we do have some other programs that are associated with our Discover Tech that are a little bit more geared for adults. But for those of you who have been following along with the Pushing the Limits book club, we've got that happening tonight at the library, and you can do that at the Valley Library tonight. And the book this month has been People of the Book, which sounds really quite interesting, about a beautiful, rare book that's fallen into the hands of someone who's a rare book conservationist, and they discover all kinds of really intriguing things about this book. And so the discussion tonight at the Valley Library at 6 p.m. will be headed up by Jody from the City Museum. So she's going to help facilitate that discussion and talk about conservation of paper and book and type of items like that. So it should be really interesting. And if you haven't read the book, you know, you can always still stop by. And then, of course, we'll have another one next month. And we'll tell you about that, more about that. But we are also having some adult programs, like I said, for our Discover Tech period here. And some of the engineers in our community have a couple of different things planned. Tomorrow night, the 7th, at the Valley Library as well, we have the Alaska Infrastructure Report Card. So that'll be an interesting discussion with the engineers that come for that. And then we're having the next night on Thursday, the 8th, at the Valley Library as well, at 6:30 p.m., Engineering in a Disaster Zone, FEMA Deployment to Hurricane Harvey and the Oso Mudslide. So big discussion about how engineers respond to things when they go wrong. Fred Nelson, he'll provide some insight from that structural engineering point of view, and how, you know, FEMA responds to these catastrophic loss of life or during that mudslide in 2015, as well as Hurricane Harvey in Texas. Fred is a professional civil and structure engineer. He's also the vice president and forensics department director at the engineering firm Gervasio and Associates in Phoenix. So he's currently one of the Alaska Society of Civil Engineers in Region 8. So it should be a really interesting discussion. And we also are doing a special family night at the Valley Library. Usually we have those downtown, but the third Thursday, February 15th, will be at the Valley Library this month. And we have a special invitation to all the Head Start families out there. Lily Hope is going to be there. She's a weaver and a storyteller here in Juneau. And it's always a great time at family night. We provide a light supper and a craft. And it's open to all families. So it's free and fun and lots of great times. And it'll also provide you the opportunity, since it'll be at the Valley Library, to stay a little extra and check out the exhibit. So those are just a few of the things coming up. Of course, we have ongoing things happening at the library all the time. We have our Tlingit Language Learners Group on Mondays downtown. Don't forget, on the 19th, we will be closed for President's Day. We also have our English classes that happen on Thursday at the Valley, Wednesdays at the Valley at 5:30. And, of course, we have our story times that happen at 11 a.m. Wednesday, Thursday, Friday at the various libraries, and toddler times on Mondays. So always something great happening at the library, and we're looking forward to having lots of people come visit for the Discover Tech exhibit, and we're just having a great time with it.
And Beth Weigel, thank you very much for coming by.
Sure.
This is Bird Note. Snowy owls are glamour birds. When some fly south from the Arctic to adorn fence posts and driftwood logs in the northern United States, people turn up in flocks to see them. But these owls are infrequent visitors to the lower 48, even in winter. Most snowy owls stay in the Arctic all year long, hunting through both the long hours of summer and the darkness of winter. So, what time of day do snowy owls hunt when they come south? Are they diurnal, or daytime hunters, or nocturnal ones? Where the big owls winter farther south, many hunt from dusk into night. During the day, they often stand on the same perch, snoozing on and off. But around sunset, the white-feathered hunters begin to appear restless. fluffing their feathers and gliding from perch to perch. As dusk sets in, these opportunists fly out to seek their prey, rodents and rabbits in the fields, ducks and shorebirds along the coasts. They will even fly out over the water to take sleeping seabirds. Have you seen a snowy owl in your neck of the woods? Share a photo on our Facebook page at Bird Note Radio. For Bird Note, I'm Mary McCann.
Relax and escape into glorious bird song. Receive an exclusive 20-minute version of Gordon Hempton's Global Sunrise at birdnote.org.
It's about 15 minutes past the hour, and you are tuned into a Juno afternoon. Our next guest in the studio, Kristen Miller and Sarah Redke Brown, here to talk about Into the Woods, and play they're putting on in the near future. Thank you for coming down to the station.
Thank you for having us.
So tell us about In the Woods, please. Into the Woods.
So Into the Woods is a musical by Stephen Sondheim, and it's essentially taking the Brothers Grimm stories and putting them all together into one story where they kind of meld into the woods. And, you know, most of the modern day fairy tales have happy endings. As you might know from the actual Grimm stories, some of them actually don't have, they have some dark twists to them. And Sondheim really kind of takes that to heart because it ends when you think the story is going to end with a happy story, with a happy ending, you are a little surprised because there's some twists at the very end. Twists all the way through, exactly. It's the Brothers Grimm stories all meld into one. There's Cinderella and Rapunzel and there's
Jack and the Beanstalk.
And Little Red Riding Hood. It's a lot of fun. It's a lot of fun with really beautiful music by, of course, the King of Song, Stephen Sondheim.
Oh, absolutely gorgeous set. You really feel like you're stepping into the woods. We brought in a set designer from Chicago, Brian Bembridge, and put up some real trees and real Juno moss and a bunch of fake ferns, and it's transformative. Yeah. It's really fun.
It's kind of like, you know, we've always wanted an outdoor theater here in Juno. Well, we brought the outdoors in. So,
how many people are in the cast?
About 45. 45,
wow.
Yeah. And it's three generations of singers, really. I mean, we have adult singers that are both at the professional level and the amateur level. We have high school students, and then we also have the Alaska Youth Choir all come together for this show.
And how many members in the band?
The orchestra is, I think about a dozen people. About a dozen people. And Rich Moore is doing a great job of bringing them all together, working with musical director. Michelle, his wife, Moore, is the stage director for the show. So it's really fun to see them working together for this show.
And rehearsals have been going on since November. It's really a lot of work went into this show. It's really fun.
What's the most fun about it for you?
I think, like I said, just you walk into JDHS and suddenly you're in the woods, and then all these characters come out, and just seeing how these stories intertwine, it's very interesting. I would not have predicted how it goes.
Yeah, and there's some really standout singing in this show, too. Patricia Hall does a great job as the witch. I mean, she's a stage veteran, and she has really taken this role to heart, and she brings a lot of comedic relief as well to the role. There are some standout high school singers, the young ladies that are singing the Cinderella and
Little Red.
They do a wonderful job. Zeb Bodine is playing the baker, and Aria Moore is the baker's wife, and they are a dynamic duo. They do a great job. So it's a lot of
local favorites from, again, three generations. So,
Kristen, what do you play?
Nothing. I'm producing. Co-producing with Charlie Weiss.
What goes into producing a play like this?
A lot of work. We've been working on this for probably a year, yeah. I'd say. And so first you have to get your team together, get your production team together, come up with a budget, get all your players involved. Everything from your director to your music director to your set designer to your lighting designer to your tech people to your, and then your course auditions, your cast. It's putting all the pieces together, basically. And I learned a long time ago not to try to produce and be in a show. My co-producer, Charlie, I probably should have warned him about that because he's pretty tired.
Now, this cold and flu season, what do you do when some of your principal characters have an illness.
We have no understudies. So one thing that Michelle said early on is that I like to do the weekend that has three performances, I like to do that the first weekend because everybody tends to get sick the second week. So if we can get through those first three performances and a few people are sick for the closing weekend, maybe they'll have enough stamina to get through it. But I'm not going to put three productions on the second weekend.
Mm-hmm. You run on so much adrenaline, you know, prior to the opening of the show that you just don't, your body doesn't tend to release and let go and get sick until after it's done anyway. It's just kind of, I mean, you get sicknesses periodically, but it's not as typical when you're really kind of relying on the adrenaline of your body.
And knock on wood, I don't think there's anybody in the cast right now is sick.
No, so. All
hopefully
healthy.
We can hold it together.
Yeah.
Well, why did you pick this play, Into the Woods?
Why did we pick the End of the Woods?
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, interesting story. We had thought about doing another show. We really wanted to do Les Mis, actually, was what we had chosen originally. And Les Mis went back on Broadway, a tour. And so they pulled the rights for it. And so we thought, well, what other show is out there that, you know, can really use a big cast of all ages that is accessible to the community, that would have, you know, a really fun a fun story, a fun set, you know, great costumes, because we want things that have a lot of color and are eye-catching. And Into the Woods is it. I mean, it's a great choice for what we were looking for.
What else is coming up in the future for the Lyric Opera?
We've got the gala up in April. It will be a Heroes and Villains gala.
April 28th.
28th, right, at Elizabeth Pradovich Hall. We have Afternoon of Aves at the Shrine. And then also in March, we're collaborating with the Orpheus Project. You know, they're bringing the Princess Sophia in October, but they're workshopping it in April. And we're bringing... March. Thank you. March. And we're bringing it into the schools. That's the plan so far. So,
and there'll be a performance on that Saturday. It's the middle of May. I think it's around the 17th, something like that.
The 17th of March.
How do people get tickets for opening night?
They can buy them at Hearthside Books, at The Jack, at The Door, and JunoOpera.org. It's two weekends. It is February 9th, 10th, and 11th this weekend, with the Sunday matinee on the 11th. And
next Friday, Saturday, the 16th and 17th. Showtimes are at 7 p.m.
Yes, for the evening shows.
All right, Kristen Miller and Tara Benke-Brown, anything you want to add I might have forgotten to ask?
Come see it. Come see it twice, because it's going to be a different show every time.
All right, thanks for coming by.
Thanks for having us.
Every Alaskan can make a difference when they file online for their PFD. Pick, click, give. A great and easy way to support nonprofits in Alaska. You simply donate during your PFD application process. There are dozens of nonprofits that you can support in Juneau alone, including KTOO Public Media. The application period for the PFD begins January 1st and runs through March 31st. More information can be found at pickclickgive.org.
Dieu, que c'est lâche, que c'est fâcheux, quelle tragédie, quel tracas. Mon Dieu, que c'est vache, mon amoureux est reparti là-bas. Mon Dieu, que c'est triste, il m'aimait si peu, moi je l'aimais tant, je crois. Mon Dieu, tu t'en fiches, toi tu n'as Dieu que pour une autre que moi. Même si le temps passe, je n'oublie pas. La samba des jours avec toi. La samba des jours avec toi. La samba de mon cœur qui bat. La samba des jours avec toi. La samba des jours avec toi. La samba de mon cœur qui bat. Samba de mon cœur qui bat.
It's 23 minutes past the hour, and you are tuned to Juneau Afternoon. Our next guest in the studio is Jack Hodges. He's the author of a bio book, Above and Beyond, Life of an Alaskan Aviator and Voyager. Jack, thank you for coming down to the station today.
You're welcome.
So the book signing is tonight at 6:30 at Hearthside Books in the Nanaimo Mall. Why did you write this book?
I wrote this book mostly for my family and friends, but also my coworkers, and turned out to be a book that I think would be interesting to the general public. I've done some interesting things when I look back on my life and felt that it was worth writing about.
Cool. Have you been writing this book for several years?
Yeah, I would say 2 or 3 years. Certainly not full time, but off and on.
How do you remember things like conversations between two different people?
I kind of have a brain that remembers conversations pretty well, at least important ones that stand out to me. And I took some notes when I was over in Russia because I knew it was a very special thing that I was doing. So between the two of those, I do pretty good.
And there's some troubles in Russia. Do you want to tell me about those, please?
Current troubles?
No, the troubles in Russia.
Well, there were the authorities. Like, for example, when I went in there on my longest trip, I had to take $18,000 U.S. cash because they wouldn't accept anything but U.S. cash for fuel, parking fees, landing fees, and whatnot. And I knew that that some people were being murdered in Russia at that time for less than $10,000. So I hid $9,000 behind the paneling in the interior of the aircraft and only declared $9,000. So they didn't find that. So that turned out okay. And another time, the authorities accused us of searching for and stealing mammoth tusks. And, of course, we were there doing wildlife surveys. And the Russian navigator that was with me had to deal with this particular official and told him, well, you know, they said that they were going to follow us with their helicopters and make sure that we didn't do anything wrong. And our Russian navigator, Victor, said, you can follow us all day long. We're just flying a straight line up this way and a straight line back and forth, counting waterfowl.
How do you count birds?
Well, we fly the aircraft. We do this all over North America, and a couple of us pilots do it in Alaska. We fly low, generally about 100 feet off the ground, and each of us, I'm flying and looking out my side of the aircraft out to 220 yards, an eighth of a mile, and an observer is looking out the same distance on the other side, and we just have to get good at seeing the ducks, identifying what species they are, if there's a lot of them, counting them rapidly as we go by at about 100 miles an hour.
What made you go flying in the first place?
The first 10 years of my career up here, I was a bald eagle specialist. And that some of my stories are in the book about my bald eagle activities. But also working in our office was two guys that flew these waterfowl surveys all over the state of Alaska and throughout parts of Canada and even in Mexico. And after I'd had 10 years with bald eagles, I looked at what they were doing and saw a possible opportunity and thought this would really expand my horizons. So I got my flight certificates and got hired. In the next 24 years, I spent as a pilot biologist.
What's the magic of flying for you?
I think the most important thing to me, or what feels the best, is doing it well, doing it successfully, doing it safely. I never injured an airplane or a passenger, and so I think taking pride in doing it well. I've flown all of the coastline of Southeast Alaska at 100 feet, something nobody else has done. I've flown it twice, once in summer, once in winter, and that's an amazing thing to fly all the fjords and all the steep shorelines and islets and making all those turns and trying to do it accurately, safely, and it's very satisfying to do something like that.
You're also the first person to navigate a watercraft from Seattle to Alaska. How did that come about?
Well, I tend to think big, and I tend to try to do some things in my life that are different, that might make a small mark while I'm here. And I saw this water bike in Mexico when I was down there. It was sitting on the beach, and I was able to rent it for a couple hours. And I decided this is a really neat little craft, and maybe I could do something special, like be the first person to pedal a watercraft from Seattle to Alaska. And so I did that in 1995.
How long did that take you?
Took me 44 days. I averaged about 23 miles a day.
When you're writing a bio book, when do you stop? Other than the obvious.
Yeah. Well, I knew the things that were most important to write about, and I actually wrote more than what's in the book. There were some things after people reviewed it that said, this particular chapter isn't going to be that interesting to the general public. And so then it was more of backing off from what I had written. But I think it's better to write more and weed it down. And I had to leave out a lot of things. You do a lot in your life, but you key in on the most important, the most unique, or the most interesting.
Cool. I'm talking with Jack Hodges. He's just written a book, Above and Beyond, Life of an Alaskan Aviator and Voyager. He's signing copies of it at 6:30 tonight at Hearthside Books in the Nugget Mall. Could you read a little bit, please, Jack?
Sure. I made 6 flights into Siberia from Alaska, 6 missions. The longest one took us 2,000 miles across northern Siberia, which is halfway basically across Russia. And we were clear over at the Lena River Delta, kind of at the end. Everything had been going smoothly, and we had almost accomplished our goal. When we got to the Lena River Delta, we found out from the local authorities that we wouldn't have permission to fly our surveys there. We hadn't arranged that ahead of time. And we were able to get that finally arranged, and we'd almost completed all of our flights over this huge, broad river delta. And so we were in our hotel room, 4 of us, myself and the American biologist and the Russian navigator and the Russian biologist. And we were feeling really good. So here's a few paragraphs where I explain about that or what happened there. Whoops. Get my place here again. I say, that evening I made the biggest social and cultural blunder of all my trips to Siberia. We were in good spirits. All 4 of us were in the hotel room. We probably had a few drinks. Everyone was happy that we were closing in on completion of our mission. We had secured permission to fly the Lena River Delta. We were joking and just plain feeling good. I made a comment, actually a gesture and a salutation. It was stupid, ignorant, and inappropriate. My father spent 23 months in Europe during World War II and was in the Normandy invasion and the liberation of France. I should have known about the unimaginable loss of life in World War II. I knew that 6 million Jews had died at the hands of Germans. that terrible piece of recent history I had acquired. I'd also read the diary of Anne Frank. I knew that nearly 500,000 Americans had died. But as a lad, my friends and I would play around and we would extend our arm out and shout, "Heil Hitler!" It was play. We would laugh and romp with each other with no thought of war. Here in Tixie, in the middle of our gaiety, for some inexplicable reason, I extended my right arm and called out, "Heil Hitler!" Victor and Nikolai twisted to look at me, directly into my eyes. Their faces were stone cold, grave, accusative. Silence, staring silence. I waited. Then Victor slowly and quietly said, "Was that a joke?" I was stunned. I said, "Yes, that was a joke." Then Victor addressed me as a father would his son. "There are two things in Russia that we never joke about, World War II and bread. 25 million people in Russia died in World War II. Millions of them died of starvation. There was no bread. We do not joke about this." I apologize to Victor and Nikolai.
Jack Hodges reading from his new book, Above and Beyond, Life of an Alaskan Aviator and Voyager. Signing copies of it tonight at Hearthside Books at 6:30. Jack, thank you for coming down to the station today.
You're welcome, Jeff.
Stayed and I damn near didn't come back again. I didn't go very fast on a steam-powered aeroplane. Oh, the wheel went around and up and down and inside and then back again. Sitting in a 747 just watching them clouds roll by. Can't tell if it's sunshine or if it's rain. I'd rather be sitting in a deck chair high up over Kansas City on a genuine, old-fashioned, authentic steam-powered aeroplane. Sitting in a 747 just watching them clouds roll by. Can't tell if it's sunshine or if it's rain. Rather be sitting in a deck chair high up over Kansas City on a genuine, old-fashioned, authentic steam-powered aerial plane.
downtown Hartford. It's about 38 minutes past the hour, and you are tuned into Juno Afternoon. Our next guest is Karen Smolin. She is the CTE coordinator. Thank you for coming by.
Thank you.
Tell me what CTE stands for, please.
CTE stands for Career and Technical Education. It's the old kind of voc ed term, but that's what we call ourselves now in our programs.
And this is CTE Month?
This is National CTE Month, and I'm here to share some highlights in the school district about things that are going on.
First, tell me, approximately what's the percentage of people who go into CTEs, if seriously?
Well, everybody takes at least some. Everybody has a career, so there you go. We all have careers. But all our students take at least one career and technical education course, if not more, in our high schools. And we have some really great data about students who take those courses. At least 60, almost 60% of our high school students take at least one career and technical education class. And we have, this is kind of cool, we have 100% graduation rate of students who take two or more credits in a career pathway. And our high schools have career pathways or courses connected to career areas that they take over the course of their high school experience that they may take. So we have some great data that shows that it makes a difference in high school graduation, it makes a difference in student engagement, and hopefully makes a difference in their decisions about where they might want to go in their future after high school. We also have a lot of opportunities for students to take dual credit courses where they earn high school and university credits for some classes. And in fact, I'll make an announcement at the same time I'm doing it. Registration forms for dual credit classes for this semester are due. And those courses include Woods 1 and 2, our Metals 1 class, our Auto Mechanics 2 class, Small Engines, Intro to Health Sciences, Accounting 1 and 2, and our Fisheries Tech class. So there's a lot of great opportunities for students to earn their high school credit, but also start building university transcripts towards occupational endorsements and certifications and AA degrees in our university system. So that's the other great news about that. Our high schools each have career pathways that connect to high-demand occupations and opportunities in our state. And at JD, there's the architecture, construction, and engineering courses and career pathways.
Is that the one where they build a house?
Yes, that's where we build our house. We are doing a house build project with University of Alaska Southeast and the Juneau Housing Trust. And we've been building affordable houses for several years, and we're in the process of planning a series of houses over many years in the Renninger subdivision in the Lemon Creek area. And we're hoping to break ground this spring and start building the first of two houses in our phase one part of the project. But our high school students are the labor. Our University of Alaska Southeast Construction Management Program provides our technical guidance in construction management. And the Juneau Housing Trust is kind of the consultant to the project with us, and we are building it for their programs. And so we build these affordable houses and turn them over to people who qualify for them each time we finish that. We've built seven houses over the past several years, and we're about to build seven more over many years, which is super cool. Some of the other career pathways just to finish at JD High include business and communications. We also have STEM, including marine science and health sciences, and even the fine arts. And at Thunder Mountain, they have marine and environmental sciences. They have STEM career pathway courses, hospitality, and fine arts as well. So there's a lot of wonderful opportunities for our students to experience one course or a series of courses to help them look at career interests and plan for their future. Some other cool things happening is there are summer job fairs going on between our two high schools this past week during the lunch times. And there are course registration and information nights coming up at each school in the next few weeks so students can sign up for these classes. Some other really nice highlights that I'd like to share because it is CTE month. Some cool things in each high school that our students are working on. Our CAD 1 students recently presented proposals to our CBJ planners and community members for Rotary Park landscape designs, which was really something interesting that the students worked with them in design ideas, and then they were reviewed by the planners and other community members. Many of these students have gone on to take CAD 2 classes at the university and even internships in the community as they continue their career interests. We have a video production program where this is at JD High, where students present and plan a TV broadcast every Friday, and it's posted on Channel 6 and on YouTube. And Miko Wilson from here is our technical director, along with Tanya Moser, our teacher, and the students are learning all the fine craft of video creation and production and then putting a TV show together, so it's very fun. Our Fisheries Tech students is a program funded by DIPAC. We have a partnership with them, and it's a morning class where students are doing field research, and they are working with DIPAC staff, and they are incubating salmon eggs in Dredge Lakes that will be released later this spring. The cool thing about this class is those students also are earning dual credit with the university towards the salmon management, I can't think of the name of the occupational endorsement now, but a salmon management program and occupational endorsement there. In addition, our oceanography students have been studying, types of waves and ramifications of shorelines with erosion, and the Tsunami Bowl students are planning for the state competition this month and doing a study on resource management in a warming Pacific. There are Intro to Health Sciences students who are in work experiences around the community, including Bartlett Hospital and local medical offices. And we have this girls club called Ignite with our teacher, Kaplan Anderson, and they've been working in concert with Robin Gilchrist at UAS. It's a club to encourage young women to explore STEM and trades occupations. And so they built rabbit houses and rabbit cages. And the fine part was that they designed and constructed this cage and the facility for it with Robin Gilchrist at UAS's help to do this. And so that's kind of cool. And then we have robotics teams, and Thunder Mountain and JD High are sending teams to the state competition this next month, with Thunder Mountain sending like 5 teams. They won the regional competition.
Cool.
Our Thunder Mountain High School students just recently celebrated in their marine biology class, where they rearticulated sea otter skeletons, and then they're hanging in the school. And they did this with the School College of Fisheries and Ocean Sciences at UAF under Shannon Atkinson, and worked with her in a collaborative project where they cooked it up and rearticulated these bones. The class is called Dem Bones, and they earned University of Alaska Fisheries credit at the same time. And all over the Thunder Mountain High School, you will see skeletons of whales and sea otters and seals in the atriums and in some of the display cabinets. It's been a very successful program where we've had a lot of student interest in wanting to take this class. We have digital arts students in Thunder Mountain who are doing some amazing things, and recently they had a digital arts competition called the Idita Photography and Video Contest. It was in memory of Jan Niemeyer, a former art teacher, and Thunder Mountain High School and JD students won in different categories for digitally enhanced photos and some videos, and all of them are moving to the state contest, which is in about a week up in Anchorage. We have an AP computer science class where students are learning how to write their own methods in Java and looking at artificial intelligence, and hopefully they'll be our future programmers. So there's just so many cool things going on in our schools. And also, our culinary students at Thunder Mountain have earned their food worker cards, so they can all go to work in the local food industry, and they're learning the basics of culinary.
Karen Smolin, thanks for coming in today.
Thank you.
A lot of things to be proud of.
On me dit que nos vies ne valent pas grand-chose, elles passent en un instant comme fanent les roses. On me dit que le temps qui glisse est un salaud, que de nos chagrins il s'en fait des manteaux. Pourtant quelqu'un m'a dit que tu m'aimes encore. C'est quelqu'un qui m'a dit que tu m'aimes encore. Serait-ce possible alors? dit que le destin se moque bien de nous, qu'il ne nous donne rien et qu'il nous promet tout. Paraît que le bonheur est à portée de main, alors on tend la main et on se retrouve fou. Pourtant quelqu'un m'a dit que tu m'aimes encore. C'est quelqu'un qui m'a dit que tu m'aimes encore. Serait-ce possible alors? Serait-ce possible alors? Mais qui est-ce qui m'a dit que toujours tu m'aimais? Je ne me souviens plus, c'était tard dans la nuit. J'entends encore la voix, mais je ne vois plus les traits. Il vous aime, c'est secret, lui dites pas que je vous l'ai dit. Tu vois, quelqu'un m'a dit que tu m'aimais encore. Mais l'a-t-on vraiment dit que tu m'aimais encore? Serait-ce possible alors?
Tickets are on sale now for the 26th annual Great Alaska Craft Beer and Homebrew Festival, May 25th and 26th in Haines, Alaska. Sample craft beers from more than 20 of Alaska and Yukon's best breweries, and enjoy delicious food, live music, and friends new and old at the historic fairgrounds in Haines. Festival tickets are limited and will sell out. Purchase tickets online at seakfair.org.
It's about 10 minutes before the hour, and you are tuned into a junior afternoon. Our next guests in the studio are members of the Floyd Dryden Middle School Drama Club. They're presenting Mulan Jr. as their next presentation in the studio. Also is Missouri Smythe. Thank you for coming in, everybody.
You're welcome. Thank you, Jeff, for the invitation.
So I'm familiar with Mulan. What is Mulan Jr.?
Okay, so Mulan Jr., and I'm going to have one of the students talk a little bit about that. So if one of the students would introduce themselves and then their name and character, and if they would speak about what the story of Mulan is about.
Hi, I'm Lele Hua. I'm Mulan. And the story is about a girl, Mulan, and she stands in for her father in the war to honor the family in his place.
Right. And who is she fighting against, Mulan?
She's fighting against the Huns.
Okay. And what are the Huns doing?
The Huns are trying to take over China.
Okay, right. So that's basically the story. It's a very old Chinese legend that has been around since AD 500. And so we decided this year, at least I decided this year, to do Mulan, because the story is a story of bravery and strength and unity and about the honor of the family.
I'm going to ask our actors here to say their name. First name is just fine. And then what character you play. And then I'm going to ask you to do your favorite line in the play.
Okay, my name is Tommy, and I'm playing Captain Shang of the Imperial Army. And my favorite line in the play is probably at the end when I'm at Mulan's house, their manor, and Mulan asked me if I want to stay for dinner, and then Mulan's grandmother, she's like, "Do you want to stay forever?"
All right, and then who else do we have?
I am Brighton Murray. I will be casted as Mushu, the dragon. I would have to say one of my personal favorite lines is, so the ancestors have just woken the dragon up, but I have not been back at the pedestal yet, which I am currently trying to get to. And I just go on a ramble about how I should be up there and how they're really just casting, they're not treating me as one of them. That's my personal.
Did you say the line?
Oh. You know, some people might just stay up all high and mighty up in your fancy temple, while I'm stuck down here on Earth doing your dirty work.
All right. I'm Lyric, and I am casted as Lao Zi, the ancestor of honor. One of my favorite lines in the play is towards the end when Mulan is fighting Shan Yu, and I say, seems like tradition has gone out the window.
Right, and then Mulan.
One of my favorite lines from the play is when I'm with the matchmaker and she's testing me to see if I'm good for a husband. And then I say, I study her face, and then I say, wow, even your mole has a mole.
Now I'm going to do a round robin again. Ask you, what is the most the thing that you remember most strongly about being in the play?
I have to say that the most memorable part of the play, in my opinion, I think, is how Mulan pulls off being a boy in the Imperial Army for so long. Because she even though she may be a tomboy, she's not really a boy, so she doesn't fit the part at first. But she eventually gets into a role that she fits really well.
Well, I would have to say one of the most memorable things from our play is the part about how even though Mulan, like we have stated, is a boy, she has so much support through the ancestors that it's kind of overwhelming to a point, and so it just kind of adds a whole different comedic purpose to the play.
Cool.
I think one of the most memorable parts in the play is when we're practicing to fight for the Huns, and then we do this really cool dance scene, and we have our choreographer, and we have our stick that we twirl around, and then we do these really cool, like, karate scenes.
I would have to say that one of the most memorable parts of the play is towards the end when Mulan gets the Emperor's crest and the sword of Shan Yu, the main, like, the leader of the Huns. It, like, brings her family so much honor, and I just think that that's a beautiful part of the play.
Okay. And that's exactly, I think, the reason why I chose Mulan was, number one, it was a wonderful opportunity for the students at Floyd Jordan to be able to study the Chinese culture. And as they discovered in the Chinese culture that honor and family are very, very important to them, and that there are traditions that they keep and hold close to them. And so the challenge that Mulan has in this musical is that she breaks tradition by taking her father's place, and yet in taking her father's place, she is doing it because she wants to continue to hold the honor that her family has, and she also cares about her father. And so through her journey and her story, there are two worlds that are colliding with each other, but in the very end, I think what they realize is that these two worlds can work together and bring about the honor that they seek, and also the, I would say, the independence of Mulan in the musical.
And when is it all open?
I'm going to have Tommy Pearson, if he could just let us know when the dates are. Tommy, would you do that?
So we will have our first show on Friday, February 23rd at 7 p.m. at Thunder Mountain High School. Then our next performance will be Saturday, the next day, February 24th, still at Thunder Mountain, and at 2 p.m. and at 7 p.m. And the tickets will be available from the Mulan cast members and at the door, so you don't have to worry, you can still buy tickets.
All right, I'd like to thank the members of the Floyd Jordan Middle School Drama Club for coming into the station today. Missouri Smythe, thank you very much for bringing them down.
Jeff, would you mind if we sing a song from the show for you just to finish the interview? Do we have time?
Sure.
Okay. Yeah. All right.
We wake up each morning to another day, each one playing a part that is her own. With a future as certain as the buds of May, every step of the way already known, written in stone.
All right, that's fantastic. And tell me again the opening day.
Okay, so our dates of our show will be Friday, February the 23rd. We have our opening night at 7 o'clock at Thunder Mountain High School. And then Saturday, February the 24th, we have a show at 2 o'clock and then a show at 7 o'clock.
All right, I want to thank everybody for coming down to the station. Thanks so very much.
Thank you, Jeff.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
This is KTOO Juneau. We broadcast at 104.3 FM in downtown Juneau and Douglas. We also rebroadcast on translators K276AF in the Mendenhall Valley and Auk Bay, K269AO in Lemon and Schweitzer Creeks, K210AM in Gustavus, K220BT in Hoonah, and K210AS in Excursion Inlet and Icy Strait. In Juneau, KTOO is